This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The time is 7:33 a.m. The date is May 21st, 2008. And we're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Suite 270, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State. I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Mike Kaufman. To my left is Dan Carton, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. Mr. Carton will be sitting as the Director's designee for this morning's agenda items 1 through 11. And then for this afternoon's agenda items, the Director's designee will be Sharon Eubanks, who is also Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services. To my right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is the designee for Attorney General John Southers. Also sitting in as the Attorney General's designee on some agenda items will be Jeff Blue, Deputy Attorney General. To my far left is Maury Kanizer, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the Title Board, and to my far right is Ceci Gomez from the Secretary of State's office. Just some general information about procedures. There is a sign-up sheet for each measure on the table by the door. Anyone who wishes to testify should sign up on the sign-up sheets. There are actually, for each measure, there are two titles. There's a title in the form of a statement and the title in the form of a question. Typically, we work off of just the first title with the understanding that the same changes would be made to the title in the form of a question. For any new measures, the board follows basically three steps. First, in order to make sure the board understands the measure, I'll provide an opportunity for board members to ask questions of the proponents. Second, the board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title, and that necessarily includes determining whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. And then third, if the board decides that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will proceed to work on titles using a staff-prepared draft, which is also available on the table by the back door. For measures that are before the board on motions for rehearing, the issue is just whether or not there's any disagreement with what the board did at the preceding meeting. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board. We are not concerned with the merits of any proposal, but only with the setting of fair and accurate titles. We do have a very lengthy agenda today. This is the final regular meeting of the board, other than considering motions for rehearing next week. In order to get through the agenda, we will have to move more quickly than we usually do. I will probably restrict testimony as necessary to move the agenda along. Some of the measures are similar to measures that have been heard before by the board, and speakers are certainly welcome to incorporate their remarks that they made on the record in prior hearings. There are several measures that have potential TABOR fiscal impacts. I did ask the Office of State Planning and Budgeting to provide fiscal estimates for those measures. So we do have fiscal estimates for number 103, which deals with the Colorado Housing Investment Fund, and associated with that, OSPB, Office of State Planning and Budgeting, provided a revised fiscal estimate for number 86, which is a similar measure. We have a fiscal estimate from OSPB from on number 113, which deals with severance taxes, and likewise, OSPB issued revised fiscal estimates for number 68 and number 88, which are board measures previously heard by the board on the same subject. And then finally, we have fiscal estimates from OSPB on 91A and 128, which deal with a sales tax for persons with for services. For persons with developmental disabilities. I believe the fiscal estimates are on the table by the door. Also, just one other thing. Earlier this week, the Supreme Court did reverse the board on number 61, and that will be presumably remanded to the board once the mandate in that case becomes is issued by the court, which I think is in a couple of weeks. So we will likely have a meeting, I think, June 4th. But in any event, that there will be public notice of that at some point when we're ready to consider that measure on remand. With that, I think I'm ready to go to the first agenda item. This is 2007-2008, number 97, strike in support of combat troops. This is here before us on a motion for rehearing from Paige Pink. Mr. Pink, if you will let us know how you disagree with what the board did last time.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking the time to see me this morning. My disagreement is, as I stated, the heart of the matter should be as close to the front of the title as possible. I find no precedent in the Colorado Constitution or really any legal reference that says that it has to be written, "There shall be an amendment." In fact, in one of my earlier appeals to the Colorado Supreme Court over a final action on the title board, Mr. Kneiser himself said that it is possible for the title board to write titles differently. So the conclusion of my disagreement is that you didn't put the part about the sex strike as close to the front as possible.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pink. Are there any questions for Mr. Pink? If not, is there anybody else present who wishes to testify on the motion for rehearing? If not, then I'll turn to board discussion. Any discussion by the board? Mr. Carton? Oh. I guess I'll just offer that I understand Mr. Pink's point of view. We've had this discussion before. I think the titles that we set last time are, I think, fair and accurate and sufficient. I guess I'll just go ahead and move that the motion for rehearing be denied.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that concludes action on number 97. Thank you.
I just have one more question.
Briefly, Mr. Pink.
Yeah. Ceci Gomez, you said that final printout from the final action on the title board will be ready tomorrow in the morning?
It'll be ready by Friday.
Okay. So I was just wondering, should I just expect it not tomorrow because...
Because of the length of today's agenda, I doubt if she'll be able to finish everything tomorrow.
So that's right.
So count on, I would count
really
on Friday.
Okay, I understand. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you. The next agenda item is 2007-2008, number 2, prayer time in public schools. Again, I'd first like to hear from proponents if they're present. Do we have somebody from the proponents that are? No one yet? I'll lay that one over one item then. Is somebody here for number 100, attendance in public schools? Okay, let's go ahead and move to that one. And just for the record, the time is 7:43 a.m. If you'll identify yourself, sir, for the record and who you represent.
My name's Wilhelm Estes. I represent myself.
Okay. Before I turn to questions from the board, is there any background information or anything that we need to know in order to set titles?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Any questions from the board for Mr. Estes? I guess we're still warming up here this morning.
Okay.
So...
I do have a comment on the proposal I received from you guys.
On the title?
Yeah.
Before we get to that, let me just, as I indicated earlier, the first step will be for the board to determine
sure.
if the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Is there any discussion by the, and do I have anybody else? I don't have anybody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on number 100? If not, then I'll turn to board discussion of the single subject issue. Any discussion by the board? Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It
I've looked at number 100, and it seems to me that it, the measure contains a single subject, a central theme, which I think is leaping ahead, stated in the staff draft, and I would support a motion to move forward with setting a title.
I think I don't have any disagreement with that. If not, if you want to go ahead and make a motion, Mr. Carton.
I move the title board find that measure 2007-2008, number 100, contains a single subject and proceed with setting a title for the measure.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff prepared draft. Ms. Gomez has displayed it on the screen in the room. And Mr. Estes, you indicated that you did have a comment or two about the title.
Yeah, it's more of a concern. At the end it says that a parent can excuse a child who's performing satisfactorily. Satisfactory to who? That's the only concern I have. That's why in my draft I was a little more, I put a grade point and had some discussion with the state about, you know, how to do that, since everybody's got a little bit different system. And I just worry that what's satisfactory to one person may not be satisfactory to another. And that's my concern.
Okay. One of the issues that the title board faces is of course, to set, we're required to set brief titles. Do you have a particular suggestion?
Just a thought would be a child who is passing. A passing level. I'm just trying to think of some way to change it to.
I'm not sure we need the grade point or the entire concept in there.
No, I agree with you.
If we did, I don't think it adds as much length to put a child who is maintaining a 2.0 GPA doesn't take it very long. But I have kind of bigger picture issues with the title.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Bigger than that. Well, this one, I think, may not be one of the titles that makes sense to do in this structure, that it may make sense in this one to go with our typical format of saying an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning compulsory school attendance, and then saying, and in connection therewith, permitting the parent of a child who, however we come up with it, is maintaining a grade point average above 2.0 to excuse his or her child from compulsory school attendance. What I think the concern I have is just with the language of recognizing the right of a parent is a little bit. It doesn't actually recognize a right. It grants a certain privilege in some sense. And so, to me, I think the way it is now is a little bit unnecessarily uses language that's not part of the measure. And we could and should be a bit more precise about what's going on. Because this, the way it is now, might sort of mislead people, I think, into thinking that the measures does more than it does. Recognizing the right sort of creates the idea that it's something that can never be altered or taken away. So that's my concern.
And I had a similar concern about the phrase that said recognizing the right. It also seemed to me that might not be a good choice of words, and I think what Mr. Domenico is suggesting is there's basically two structures we can follow here. it seems to me. And one is kind of, you know, as he described it, the traditional or typical structure, which is to say concerning a subject like concerning compulsory school attendance and common connection therewith, you know, something about what the measure does. The alternative, which is similar to the structure that we have right now, but maybe with a change of wording about the rights of parents, would be an amendment allowing a parent to excuse his or her child or something
like
that.
Or have the ability to excuse their child. Yeah.
Something like that.
I'm not hung up on right to do this and right to do that.
Okay.
So.
I mean, the advantage to you, Mr. Estes, maybe with respect to Mr. Domenico's suggestion, is it makes it easier to get in that something about the grade point average, that a little
sure.
more detail, if you prefer that.
Yeah, I think that's acceptable.
Yeah, I'm not stuck on the concerning language either. The way you suggested permitting or allowing a parent, I think, works just as well as my suggestion. And maybe actually be preferable, because my suggestion for the concerning language was to put in something about compulsory school attendance, when really this is about an exception to compulsory school attendance. So it may be a bad idea to put compulsory school attendance as the single subject statement, and we could avoid that trouble by skipping straight to what it does, I think. So maybe your ideas.
Well, and we could still get in some of the detail
sure.
that we're talking about. So maybe let me just make a suggestion then, for starters, that we strike the phrase recognizing the right of, and insert allowing so that would read allowing a parent to excuse his or her child who's performing satisfactorily from compulsory school attendance. And then we could add some detail if that seems appropriate. Maybe I'll just go ahead and make that motion. So I'll move that change, see if there's support for that. Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. So do we want to work in some detail about what is satisfactorily performing?
Yeah, that's my concern, is because the school may go, well, we don't think a C is satisfactory.
I think that's a good comment, and I don't think there's anything wrong with saying who is maintaining a grade point average of 2.0 or higher. Doesn't, I mean, still a pretty short title. So that would be my suggestion. Get rid of performing satisfactorily and insert maintaining a grade point average of 2.0 or higher. And I know the measure has language about the equivalent thereof. I'm not sure. I think it's good that that's in the measure. I'm not sure it's necessary to have that in the title.
I would agree. Mr. Estes, I'm sorry, go ahead. Ceci.
Do we want to put or higher? 2.0?
I think not. I think Domenico's suggesting maybe for the title that's maybe okay, but I think Mr. Domenico was raising the issue of whether or not we should include that. But.
Well, there's two parts. There's or higher or the equivalent thereof.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And yeah. You know, I doubt someone would think, well, I've got a 2.4, so now I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Not eligible for this, or I have a 4.0 and I'm not eligible. I think this gets across the point. But I, if the proponent wants any of that additional language, I don't have a problem putting it in there either.
I'm just a little paranoid, so I'd really like to have a rider.
Okay.
That's fine with me, and I understand that, because answers one question that a few people might have.
Well, you know, the problem is that I'm sure, as you guys know, that school districts set policy, and, you know, sometimes they really thump at you guys' laws and go, well, the law says this specifically, and that's kind of what led me here. So I want to be I want to be as accurate as possible, but...
well, your measure, the measure would be the law if this passes.
Right.
This is just what goes on the ballot, and
right.
So I don't think that shouldn't concern you too much, I don't think. But
okay.
it may play into how people consider it when they're sitting in the voting booth, and so if you want it in there, I don't have a
yeah,
problem.
Yeah, I would just feel better.
Well, I would move then that we make that change.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further suggested changes to the staff draft? Anybody else wish to testify on this measure? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended with the assumption, that, of course, that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause that are that appears in lines 4-6.
So moved. Second.
That's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that concludes action on number 100, and the time is 7:54. Thank you.
Yeah.
Is anyone here for number two yet? Initiative number two, prayer time in public schools. If not, I will go on to number 121. Refers from proponents, Mr. Gruskin. Are you representing? I think you're not. You're representing a proponents for number 121. Any opening comments, or shall I turn to questions from the board?
Well, let's dig in.
Okay. Are there any questions from the board concerning number 121?
Well, look, can I just ask how you foresee the two changes being made to the hours operating? So no longer, I guess the state no longer sets the hours, it's the local communities by a vote, right?
Correct. That the Constitution's current 8 a.m. to 2 a.m. Window of time is subject to modification or revision by the voters in each gaming town.
So each town has a separate vote, not that those three have one
correct
vote. Okay.
Correct. There was an extensive review and comment hearing. I have transcripts if we need to get there. But that was one of the issues that came up. And so we revised the language in 7A to include that phrase at the bottom of A that apply to licensees operating in their city's gaming district.
Okay.
This means, because the question was brought up, did it have to be a collective
right
vote?
I don't need the transcripts. I believe you.
Mr. Gruskin, could you explain, when I was reading this the other night, I was having trouble following part of this, and maybe just explain it to me. This annual adjustment, on page 2, paragraph C, relates to paragraph C. So from the revenues attributable to the operation of subsection 7, the treasurer shall pay first the expenses of the commission And then Roman numeral 2, annual adjustments. Could you just explain to me just basically what's going on there?
Sure. The at review and comment, this issue probably was the most exhaustively discussed. And what happened was there had been a benchmark for existing gaming fund recipients put in the measure. And the point of the staff, the question posed by staff is, first of all, is that really what you intend? And secondly, don't you want to build in some adjustment mechanism, such as inflation or something else, so that the benchmark dollars that had been frozen in the measure aren't, in essence, eroded by inflation or the passage of time? And we got into a fairly long colloquy about what sorts of measures are appropriate adjustment mechanisms. And one of the ones that discussed with staff and that they indicated was part of their thought process would be to, in essence, reflect the hold harmless concept by allowing for some minimum rate of growth. Gaming has, as the industry's matured, grown at a 6% rate, but it obviously doesn't make sense to, and these are some things that I'm happy to go through the transcript with you, but these are some things we struggled with. If you just put in inflation, as the staff suggested is one option, if you have kind of period of inflation, like from the 1970s, where it's 8, 9, 10%, you increase the take of existing recipients and freeze that as their base for the next year on an artificial basis. So even if there isn't gaming growth, they're being rewarded, as it were, for high inflation. And that has a compounding effect, because that then becomes their base for the next year. So we discussed that inflation as an option. Then we discussed kind of some sort of industry growth rate or historic rate or actual growth, whichever was greater or lesser. And Mr. Gall in the discussion said, yeah, that's actually something we use in statute fairly often, and that would work. And so based on that, we included C2, which is 6%, which, as I say, has been the historic growth rate since the industry matured in about 2000, or the annual rate of growth, whichever is less. As Mr. Gall said, that you could do greater or lesser, up to the proponents.
Well, and I'm missing something more fundamental, I think.
Okay.
The distributions in 5B2 are percentages. I mean, you referred to benchmark dollars.
Right.
What are you referring to? It seemed like with the percentages, it just goes up or down with revenues, but it sounds like you're trying to do something else. I'm sorry.
What this does, no, it's a very good question. What this does is ensure, this is really more about the dollars, and what it does is it takes the distribution in the year before revisions are made, and that kind of becomes the base based upon those proportions. If there are no changes made, then that base is what it continues to be, obviously based upon the percentages. But this allows for growth based in a dollar calculation rather than just a sheer percentage calculation.
Okay. I'm not entirely sure I follow, but I think it's okay, and I might want to come back to that later if it ends up being material. But okay. Any other questions for Mr. Gruskin? If not, then let's turn to the single subject question. Any discussion about the single subject? Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the issue of whether the measure complies with single subject? If not, I'll turn to board discussion on that issue. Any discussion?
I might just point out, if I could, while there's been as the board knows, a wealth of case law on various gaming initiatives, most of them were proposed before the single subject requirement went into play. The one that succeeded or was decided by the court after that with a written decision, is the case of In Re Proposed Initiative Bingo Raffle Licensees 1 and 2, cited at 9:15 Pacific 2nd, 1320, cited by the Colorado Supreme Court in 1996. And that was an instance in which the court addressed proposed initiatives that would have revamped, would have expanded games at these licensees, expanded bet limits, and changed a number of existing procedures for licensees, even if they didn't offer those expanded games. And the court found that there was a single subject of gaming activities conducted by nonprofit organizations. It says that twice, and then it later says that the single subject is revisions to the procedures used by these licensees. But bottom line is that that was an instance in which there was an expansion, and there was also a recrafting of the rules regardless of expansion. And the court found that to be a single subject. So everything here is tied to the potential for revisions. The votes, the specific types of revisions, what happens with the revenue, how that revenue is taxed, et cetera. And so we think that it, in light of that precedent, qualifies as a single subject. What that's worth.
I know we haven't gotten to the staff draft yet, but it just says concerning limited gaming as the staff draft expression of the single subject. Is that we'll get to that at perhaps.
I've got a proposed revision to that because I think that's probably I think in light of the decision I just mentioned, it's probably okay, but I'm not sure that it is as descriptive as it might be. I think in that case that I mentioned, the single subject description was concerning games of chance conducted by a bona fide charitable or nonprofit organization. The court had no problem with that. So.
Okay.
Can I just ask a really basic fundamental question? If I'm reading subsection 7C, right, all these changes about the who gets what amount of money all just relates to any additional money that might come in because one of these cities extends its hours or raises limits or does games. So if someone looks at this and says, well, they're not bringing in any more money, or if a city doesn't change its laws in any way, then nothing changes at all, right?
Correct.
Discussion on single subject, or is there a motion?
Chair, I would move that the board find that measure 2007-2008, number 121, contains a single subject and proceed with setting a title for the measure.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft. Ms. Gomez has displayed it on the screen in the room. Mr. Bruce, can you have some suggestions on changes?
I apologize that I printed this out without numbering the lines. And because I've changed the position of a number of things, it might be helpful just to read it for you. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning voter-approved revisions to limited gaming and in connection therewith, allowing the local voters in Central City, Blackhawk, and Cripple Creek to extend hours of operation, authorize games to include roulette and craps or both, and maximum single bets up to $100, adjusting distributions to current gaming fund recipients for growth in gaming tax revenue due to voter-approved revisions in gaming, distributing 78% of the remaining gaming tax revenue from this amendment for student financial aid and classroom instruction at community colleges according to the proportion of their respective student enrollments, and 22% for local gaming impacts in Gilpin and Teller counties and the cities of Central City, Blackhawk, and Cripple Creek according to the proportion of increased tax revenue from voter-approved revisions in each city or county, and requiring any increase in gaming taxes from the levels imposed as of July 1, 2008, to be approved at a statewide election if local voters in one or more cities have approved any revision to limit gaming. To some extent, I've tried to retain as much wording as I thought actually reflected the text of the measure and use some of the encapsulations suggested by staff. Just so you know, the discussion of the, in that first phrase after connection therewith, about voters' option, uses the verbiage in the measure and doesn't try and, at least as to single bet changes, encapsulate current law, whereas the other changes did not. I inserted the adjustments to current gaming fund recipients before the 28-78% split because it seemed to me voters ought to know that that was the first cut. And so that's why that was changed in position from after the 22-78 split. There's just a little bit more definition, I think, in the language I've chosen. Then I've just been a little bit, I think that the staff didn't entirely understand the pass provision.
First glance, it looks pretty good to me. I think it does address a couple of concerns I had with the staff draft, I believe. And Mr. Griskin, is there, well, I don't see it right off, in your draft, is there a reference to the adjustments that we were, that I was asking about earlier?
About the 6% or?
Yeah.
I used the staff's encapsulation of it because their language had been something about accounting for additional growth in gaming revenue. And I just took out the word additional because it seemed to me be repetitive.
Okay.
But that was really more a matter of trying to defer to the staff's language and not try and make this run on too long.
Mm-hmm.
If the 6% or actual rate of growth is an important detail, I'm happy to include it. Well, I'm happy to endorse your including it.
Any questions about Mr. Gruskin's proposed alternative? Mr. Carton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gruskin, in your proposed draft, near the end, the last three lines that are in strike type, I think I agree with you that the language authorizing the General Assembly to enact statutes in further of this initiative in the staff draft probably isn't necessary, and I think consistent with some of the recent titles we've set, that type of language either removed or not included. But could the provision in the staff draft that provides exempting gaming taxes collected and distributed under the new formula from existing revenue and spending limitations, could you briefly explain why you went ahead and struck that?
That was a thought that came to mind. The Supreme Court ruled on initiative number... No, excuse me. Not. The title board has set a number of titles without including that kind of proviso. And I don't know if the Supreme Court's ever reversed over that. I don't have any problem with it, that's for sure. But
thank you.
Trying to keep it short.
Any other questions for Mr. Griskin? Okay. Anybody else wish to comment or testify on the staff drafts or the Mr. Griskin's proposed alternative? Love or anybody? Okay. Discussion by the board. Mr. Gardner.
I guess just for openers, Mr. Chairman, I think that the statement of the single subject, the modifications in Mr. Gruskin's staff draft, the voter approved revisions to limited gaming language, I think that is a positive and accurate change. I'd support that.
I haven't, again, read carefully Mr. Gruskin's entire alternative. I like that change, and I think basically if, you know, I think if, assuming this is all accurate, and I believe it to be so, I think it's a real good statement. I guess I would support the alternative draft that Mr. Gruskin has proposed. It seems to have the major elements, and
yeah, I think it's a good change. There's a couple of little things I think that I would. One question I have, not really a question, I guess. The measure refers to approved games in 7A2, approved games to include. And the title says authorized games, and those seem to be the same thing to me, but I would probably use approved just because that's what's in the measure. And I guess I'm on line 5 in the Mr. Gruskin's proposal, the beginning of that. I also find the grammar a little bit odd in both the measure and the title. To extend approved games or authorized games. That's how the measure reads, and I guess that probably makes sense, but I'm not sure if it makes sense in the title. I don't really have a problem with it, since that's how the measure reads. I mean, the title would read, allowing local voters to extend the hours of operation authorized or approved games, and so I guess you would be extending the approved games to include those, which is a little bit strange to me, but I don't have a problem with it. Should we use approved there instead of authorized?
That's a very good catch. I missed that.
Well, I have another catch for you that's actually in your measure, okay, that I don't know if it's a typo that we can fix, but in C3B, 10% to the local governing bodies of the cities of Central, Blackhawk, and Cripple. And I think we need Creek in there.
Right.
So, I don't know if you think that's, I think that's a typo.
We are permitted some leeway by the Supreme Court's decisions to allow technical corrections to the measure. They've typically been misspellings or numbering issues that were obvious on their face, but this one, it looks to me like, is obvious on its face. I don't think there's any apparent substantive change in the meaning of the measure by inserting Creek in the measure, if that's what the proponents would like for us to allow.
I very much appreciate that. I just refer the board to 7A, which specifically mentions Cripple Creek.
Yeah, there's other places where D mentions it too. So.
Right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Mr.
My only other comment was, it took out in line 6, I guess, the mention of casinos. And maybe it would make sense to look at it as it's written out, whether we need to put it back in, but I was thinking it might make sense to extend the hours of operation of casinos, because we do mention limited gaming, but it doesn't really mention casinos anywhere if we take it out there, and I don't know how many people that limited gaming means casinos. Maybe everybody does, but it just seemed to me that I would put, I probably would move of casinos to after operation myself. That's the rest of it, I think, are all good changes.
Well, and that's, actually I struggled with that because I was trying to make it possessive for the whole set of extensions, but the bets are actually the patrons, not the casino's maximum bets. So that's why I I was trying to make it reflect some economy of language, but I have no problem with your...
Yeah, and I understand that. That's why I thought if you're going to do it, I would move it up mm-hmm. to the beginning of that, or to just include it after hours of operation, because it would be strange to have it at the end there right. after bets.
Right. I mean, from the proponent's standpoint, if that's the board's decision, there's certainly no objection here.
So, Mr. Domenico, then, how would that read? Allowing the local voters in those cities to
extend hours of operation of casinos, authorized or approved games to include craps or both, and maximum single bets up to $100.
Okay.
Well, you could even instead of casinos at the end of that, to extend casino hours of operations might make it avoid a little bit of the possessive problem. Which is preferable.
Yes, let me just, for the sake of discussion here, I'll go ahead and move Mr. Gruskin's alternative draft with the changes that we've been discussing. So that would, my suggestion would be in one lines 1, 2, 3, 4, line 4 of Mr. Gruskin's alternative draft, insert before hours. Casino, the word casino, so that refers to extend casino hours of operation, comma, and then strike authorized and substitute approved, so that would be comma, approved games to include, et cetera. And that would be my motion to amend the staff draft with that alternative with those changes. And there can be other changes, of course, as well. Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Further changes then to the title as amended?
Well, the rest of Mr. Gruskin's changes, I think, are helpful. How would we want to go about
maybe
incorporating them?
The motion might be then just to adopt the Gruskin proposed alternative as amended, as the title. Maybe before we do that, I just don't want to forget the fact that maybe we want to go ahead and allow the technical correction. So I guess I will move that on page 2 of the measure in section 9, subsection 7C3B in the second line, where it refers to Blackhawk and Cripple, to insert the word Creek after Cripple. Is there a second to allow that technical correction?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. So then, if there are no other further changes to the titles, then I guess I'll go ahead and move that the board adopt the Gruskin alternative titles as amended, with the understanding that the ballot title and submission clause would be the same, but in the form of a question.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that concludes action on number 121. The time is 8:23 a.m. So let's go on to number 122. Mr. Gruskin, a similar measure. Perhaps we could start by, if you would like to tell us what the differences are. Difference.
Because there was, there are only two differences between the two measures. There's one similarity, and that is that word creek is also omitted from that big paragraph. I'm somewhat embarrassed to say. But the differences are that the adjustment mechanism in 122 is inflation. And the other difference is that whereas the 121 had an effective date on the tax mechanism of July 1, 2008, this one has an effective date of January 1, 2008. But absent Mr. Domenico finding any more of my word processing problems, I think they're supposed to be exactly the same.
So the inflation adjustment in 7C2, and then the effective date, is that at the bottom of page 2?
That would be on
where?
On April. In 122, that would be section 7E, yes.
Okay.
January.
Then I guess just to address the technical correction, since we did this for number 121, I'll go ahead and move that the board allow a technical correction in the text of the measure, page 2, in 7C2B, to insert creek after cripple in line 2 of subparagraph B.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then any discussion about single subject? Anybody present wish to testify on whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement? Any discussion by the board? Not. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that board find that measure 2007-2008, number 122, contains a single subject and proceed with setting a title for the measure.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft, which Ms. Gomez has displayed on the screen. Mr. Gruskin, I suspect you may have a proposed alternative.
Obviously, the measures are virtually parallel. The goal of the proponents is to circulate only one of them.
Thank you.
The changes between this title and the one you just set is that in the highlighted version, the eighth line down that starts distributions to current gaming fund recipients says for inflation. So that's that adjustment provision. And then the fifth line from the bottom, refers to January 1 rather than July 1. But in all other regards, I'm hoping that the language is the same. And the proponents would certainly accept the changes that you made to the 121 title to this one as well.
I'll go ahead and move that the staff draft be amended by the substitution of the Gruskin proposed alternative. With the same changes that we made with in number 121, which would be in line 4, before the word hours, insert casino. And then in line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, strike authorized and substitute approved, so that that phrase reads approved games to include.
Second.
Any further discussion on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Are there further changes to the title? If not, is there a motion to adopt then those titles of the board?
So moved.
Second. I think I'm going to go ahead and read that one into the record. Mr. Gruskin had read the other one, but just for the record, then the motion, if adopted, would mean that the title would read as follows, and I hope I get this right. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning voter approved revisions to limited gaming, in connection therewith, allowing the voters in Central City, Blackhawk, and Cripple Creek to extend casino hours of operation, approved games to include roulette and craps or both, and maximum single bets up to $100, adjusting distributions to current gaming fund recipients for inflation, distributing 78% of the remaining gaming tax revenue from this amendment for student financial aid and classroom instruction at community colleges, distributed according to the proportion of their respective student enrollments, and 22% for local gaming impacts in Gilpin and Teller counties and the cities of Central City, Blackhawk, and Cripple Creek, distributed according to the proportion of increased tax revenue from voter-approved revisions in each city or county, and requiring any increase in gaming taxes from the levels imposed as of January 1, 2008 to be approved at a statewide election, if local voters in one or more cities have approved any revision to limited gaming, And then the ballot title and submission clause would be the same, but in the form of a question.
I wasn't sure if I heard on the second line any connection therewith allowing the local voters, or whether you said voters.
I should have said allowing the local voters. Okay, thank you, Mr. Gruskin. Any further discussion? The motion then is to adopt that as the titles. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 122. The time is 8:31 a.m. Anyone present yet for number two, agenda item number two and initiative number two, prayer time in public schools? I'm going to move on then to number 123, conditions of employment. Thank you. Okay, number 123. Let's first hear from proponents. Mr. Gruskin, I think you represent proponents. Take your time. I'm trying to get my papers organized too here. So. Is there anything you'd like to tell us about this one? there may be some questions about it, but perhaps if there's anything that you're aware of that we'll be asking about, maybe I'll just give you a first shot at it.
Well, this is obviously intended to have a preemptive effect as to the Right to Work initiative that's been certified to the ballot, and what it doesn't do is undo Right to Work in the sense that there is no such thing. It simply says that there are organizations that are subject to that kind of provision. And it defines the initiative 2007-2008, number 41, which is now, I believe, Amendment 47, has an expansive definition that defines labor union as an organization that has a variety of employee-related impacts, as well as any other mutual aid society for employees. That kind of language is so indefinite as to be inclusive of a variety of things that have really nothing to do with right to work or employment or even labor relationships. And therefore, this measure was drafted to provide that the types of organizations that ought not, membership in which or payment for which ought not to be a condition of employment, are those that really are ancillary to the employment relationship. An employee credit union, a political party, a get-well fund for a fellow worker, whatever it is, there are a number of scenarios in which employment could be conditioned upon either membership or payment that really doesn't have anything to do with the employment relationship. That's the purpose of this measure. And this measure is expressed that it is intended to prevail in terms of the two measures.
So let me walk through it a little bit, just make sure I understand this measure and the potential effect of this measure on number 41. Both prohibit employers from requiring participation in labor organizations, basically. Number 41 has a definition of labor organization.
It does.
That is more like a labor union type.
It's basically what you see here in terms of the exclusions is what's included in the
other. Okay. So if number 41, well, if it were not for the language of this measure that says this measure's definition of labor organization trumps all others, including number 41, these two measures could be read together if voters could approve both of them. One would prohibit requiring participation in one kind of organization, and this measure would require or prohibit employers from requiring participation in other kinds of organizations. But the effect of this measure saying that this measure's definition of labor organization would then become number 41's definition is to nullify, as you said, preemptive. I think it would nullify number 41, even if the voters approve it. And the language of this measure at the end, I think, emphasizes that, regardless of the number of votes received by this or any other such amendment. So even if number 41 prevailed, I mean, to the extent that someone might argue that the two definitions of labor organization are in conflict and therefore the normal rule might apply that the one getting the most votes would prevail. The intent is that this one would still prevail. Okay.
And just as a matter of disclosure, the ballot title set by the title board talks for number 41 speaks exclusively of labor organizations. The text of the measure actually talks about labor unions. So the concern is that you really have two distinct definitions, frankly, but they are intended to overlap, and I believe functionally they overlap, and because of the ballot title set for number 41, they overlap. And in light of the Supreme Court's case law, specifically, there was a ballot title case, taxation, Roman numeral 3, cited at 832 Pacific 2nd, 937 in 1992. The court said that you can draft a measure to, in essence, preempt another measure. And I think that the Supreme Court's recent decision on initiative number 61 indicates that that's so. The dissent was concerned about having an introductory clause that would confuse voters, but it didn't say that you couldn't undertake that kind of drafting. Now, how this ultimately gets applied, I guess, is a question for the courts. But the intent was to reflect what voters will be voting on, which is the ballot title. And that ballot title on what is now Amendment 47 only speaks of labor organizations. So, I think you can set a title under either scenario. You could set a title under the sense that they are conflicting and one is intended to preempt, or that there may be some interpretation under which they are not conflicting. But in either event, I believe that you can set a ballot title.
Well, doesn't this measure violate the single subject rule under this theory then? The two different subjects of this measure, one would be to prohibit employers from requiring participation in organizations other than unions. In other words, like you said, credit unions and get well funds and things like this, but organizations other than traditional unions. The other subject, which seems to me quite different than that, is to nullify number 41, which deals with a kind of a mirror image, but a completely opposite type of organization. And how aren't those two different subjects?
I don't think so. I think that the purpose of this measure is to prohibit the conditioning of employment upon non-employment-related organizations that, you know, for whatever reason, qualify as number 41 provides as a mutual aid society. I don't really know what those are, but I don't. The proponents don't believe that that ought to be part of the law, and so I don't think that it's a second subject. I think even if you are concerned that it's a second subject, the fact that it uses labor organization and not labor union is cause to believe that there is the possibility that down the road the court may say that I'm wrong and that the ballot title language isn't sufficient to bring number 123 within the ambit of the preemption model that I've referenced. So I don't believe it is a second subject.
Okay, and I may not be entirely following this, but let me take one more run at it. This measure mostly seems to be about prohibiting employers from requiring participation in organizations like get well funds, things that don't involve collective bargaining and things like that.
Right.
And one of the examples that I appreciate your examples. I mean, in my organization. You know, in state government, there's the Colorado State Managers Association that supervisors might belong to, or the Colorado Information Managers Association, which is an association of IT people. So employers in state government could not require their IT people to belong to the IT association, those kinds of things. But again, those are all organizations that don't deal with labor disputes, wages, rates of pay, those kinds of things. So that seems to be basically what this measure does. But because this measure also has language in it that says that that the definition of labor organization, which is which excludes what I think most people would think of as being a labor organization, since that trumps number 41, it seems like it has an entirely separate and distinct effect, which is to also prohibit employers from requiring participation in unions. And that is kind of a hidden, and well, a hidden subject, but also a completely separate subject from the main effect of this measure. I don't see how there's a single subject that incorporates both. You nullify another measure and substitute this one, but they're dealing with two different types of organizations. Saying it's okay to require participation in a labor union, but not okay to require participation in any other kind of organization. I'm trying to find the unifying principle there.
Well, the unifying principle is that there are, as the measure provides, there are limits on what sorts of conditions on employment an employer may set. I absolutely hear you, Mr. Jones. And I think that if, I mean, to the extent that you're right, then we may be saddled with 41, which applies both to typical labor union types of setups and everything else. And maybe I overlooked raising that single subject argument when 41 was before you. But it seems to me that, you know, it's, I'm not trying to equivocate about the purposes here, mm-hmm. but it seems to me that if 41 was a single subject, this one, I believe it should be. I understand your point.
Okay. Well, and of course, we're still in the question answering stage, but I've kind of moved into the single subject question. But so, if there's other members of the board that have questions, or if we want to continue the same line of inquiry, I'll leave it up to the other board members. Any other questions?
I don't. I have discussion. I don't think I have any questions.
Well, is it about the single subject? Mr. Domenico, why don't you go ahead?
Well, Mr. Gruskin's timing is quite fortunate, because last week I would have been quite certain that this violated the single subject for the reasons that Mr. Hobbs has been articulating, that this is basically, I mean, this is a surreptitious measure that hides what it's trying to do and defines labor organization to mean the opposite of what labor organization generally is understood to mean. But the Supreme Court has been quite clear that that's not our business, that people can push these kinds of measures, and it's up to the people to figure that out. And so I don't have a single subject objection. I guess my point is, I think both Mr. Hobbs and Mr. Gruskin are right. I think this hides what it's really trying to do. But I don't think that as the single subject limitation has been interpreted very recently, we can do anything about that. My single subject concern has to do with the business about also changing the rule about which measure takes precedence. That to me seems like a totally separate issue, or at least an interesting, as a conceptual matter, whether you can sort of make that kind of change in the way, in the fundamental way that measures are supposed to relate to one another in a measure itself. I mean, it seems to me would be the same thing as having a provision that said at the end, and this measure shall not be subject to this single subject requirement. That's the single subject concern that I really have, that you're both altering the substantive law of employer-employee relationships, and you're altering the law of how measures are to be applied to one another and interpreted. And that, I really don't... maybe there's precedent for that, and if there is, then I'm willing to defer to it. But to me, that seems like a difficult issue. I don't know if you have any precedent for doing this sort of thing.
There is precedent, but it predates the single subject requirement. So the court didn't address the issue that you're raising.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me to really be a... I mean, I guess you could say, oh, that's just sort of a procedural thing, but it's not a typical procedural thing where we're just, where the proponents are saying, well, this is how the agency shall implement this big substantive change we're making. This is kind of a thing, the rules don't apply to this measure, altering the interpretation rules, and I don't know what to make of that.
Well, I would just suggest that maybe an analogy would be the extent that there's a general rule of when initiatives become effective. Initiative proponents also have the right to provide in their measure that there's a different date, a different scheme for making them effective. There have been a variety of those schemes. And frankly, in 1998, the Supreme Court kept the medical marijuana measure off the ballot, but it went on in 2000. There were a series of effective dates in that measure, and they were all given effect. So I was always surprised that nobody ever raised that issue as to whether that was a problem for the 2000 ballot, but they didn't. I don't have a definitive answer for you, but it sure seems to me that this is procedural, and as long as the title is reflective of it, there's certainly no hiding the fall going on.
I agree with that. It seems to me it's really... It's just something that I can't quite figure out how that is the same subject. But I think I'm...
I think I'm willing to vote for it at this point, especially given that this cycle, at least the Supreme Court seems to have decided that single subject requirement should not stand in the way of very much. So for now, I think I'm willing to go forward, but I do have a concern about that.
Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gruskin, I know that you addressed this in your opening comments, but this is kind of a fundamental question. Just to be clear, it's the intent that in the language of the measure, the second sentence, this definition shall prevail over any conflicting definition of labor organization. It's the intent that even though 41 defines the term, the text of 41 rather than the ballot title, uses the term labor union and defines labor union, that the term labor organization in 123, for example, jumping to the end, if both measures passed, that this definition in the 123 of labor organization would trump or supersede the definition of labor union in 41?
That's correct.
And bear with me. The reason, again, that you didn't use labor union in 123, that you used labor organization instead of labor union in number 123? Be patient with me here.
No. It's a totally reasonable question. The original draft of Right to Work was couched as labor organization. And, frankly, the ballot title for that measure was couched as labor organization. The text of 41 was fine-tuned, but the ballot title was not. And so there was a kind of this weighing process of figuring out whether or not, by being more accurate with the text and potentially having a ballot title that didn't actually reflect the fact that there was going to be this funding, whether or not we would have achieved what we wanted to achieve. And so it was just a judgment call.
So you're not, and this is probably, is there potentially an issue down the line if both of these measures were to pass? Over the kind of the plain meaning of 123.
I think there potentially is, yes. And I think the court might well evaluate whether or not an expressed intent is nearly as important as what the measure says, and the plain meaning is clear, then I assume the court would try to give effect to both.
Thank you.
Well, that is very much.
Well, I appreciate Mr. Domenico's comment that perhaps the jurisprudence here has changed a bit with, I think, the Supreme Court's decision on number 31. I'm trying to review that. I guess at this point I don't view number 31 as being quite that broad. 61, I'm sorry. Thank you. And to me, this measure, 123, is, there's a lot of similarities with that case, but this measure is different. Its relationship to number 4, well, this measure is different than number 61. And I'm trying to articulate, and I should have done my homework here a little better. I'm trying to articulate for myself what the difference or differences are. It seemed like with number 61, the court was saying that there was really only one purpose in effect, and that it was not surreptitious. They recognized that the average voter may not understand the phrase that at issue there about the state's authority to act consistently with standards set out under the U.S. Constitution and so forth, but that even though the average voter may not understand that, it was, I think the court was saying, and I can't find the language that really supports what I'm about to say, that it was not surreptitious and it was not inherently confusing, and in fact it was probably pretty much the law of the land anyway. It was not really changing anything very much, and that's probably somewhat inaccurate. But basically, that part of number 61 was not of major concern to the court, just because it recognized the Supreme Court decisions and the mere difficulty with the language was not inherently deceptive. When I compare that to number 123, it seems to me there's a couple of differences. One is, here we have, by comparison, what we have in number 123 is a definition of labor organization. And the question is that surreptitious or whatever? Well, that's not merely kind of vague to the average voter. That is an exactly opposite, in my opinion, an exactly opposite definition than what the average voter commonly understands of what a labor organization is. It to me, this one, 123, is perhaps quite different from number 161 in that aspect is of number 123 is completely contrary to an average voter's understanding of the term labor organization, and that's a big difference, I think, with number one, with 61. And I guess to me the other difference is that it seems like, I'm trying to think through whether this is really true, but it seemed like 61, the court is saying that basically it didn't have two separate subjects. It did not have two separate purposes. It effectively, and I don't think the court really said this, it effectively may nullify or intended to nullify number 31, but that was the purpose. I mean, that's all it did. Here it seems like number 123 has two separate purposes. One is to nullify 41 with respect to required membership in labor organizations, but substitute something really quite substantive, unlike number 61, which is a prohibition on requiring participation in non-unions, in other kinds of employment organizations. So it has an independent effect, it seems to me. And again, that seems to be quite different than number 61. At this point, I just don't read number 61 as governing the single subject issue for number 123.
You know, these are close calls, and
everything you said is exactly what I said about 61. Exactly what I said. These kinds of measures are what we're now going to see all the time now that the court ruled that way on 61. And I think they are confusing at best and deceptive at worst. But they have to do with, 61 had to do with, as the Supreme Court was right to note, had to do with how you could take into account race and gender. This has to do with what employers can require of employees, and that's a single subject, and that's it. As I read 61, it's none of our business if it uses a definition in the first sentence that means the opposite of what it says in the second sentence. And so I'm a little frustrated, as you might gather, with the Supreme Court's interpretation of the single subject rule, but I don't see how after 61 we can distinguish this. It does exactly the same thing. It gives a definition of a word in the first sentence and then defines it in such a way that would be surprising to most people. And maybe here it would be surprising to a larger percentage of people than in 61, but I don't see how that can be the distinguishing factor. And given that, I don't know how, other than in some really long measure, it seems to me the surreptitious aspect of the single subject rule, I think, is out the window until the Supreme Court changes its mind. And here, obviously, this has to do with labor with employee-employer relationships, and that seems like just as much of a single subject as use of race or gender in government projects. And so I don't see any way to distinguish it.
Mr. Carden?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that I'd like to follow up, just ask you a question, Mr. Hobbs, kind of on your take here in with regard to the two purposes, because I think that I'm usually fairly reluctant to go into the surreptitiousness or look to see what's coiled up in the folds. But if I understand you correctly, you feel that it's your take that the measure has two subjects. One subject is to reach out and trump number 41, now I guess amendment 47, and secondly, to establish a definition or standard of labor organization that does not comport with the ordinary meaning of that term in the public or voters' minds. Those are the two separate subjects that you're seeing with this measure?
Well,
two unconnected purposes?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know that I necessarily see two subjects. Although that's what I said, I guess I'm focusing more on two separate and distinct purposes. I mean, I think it's possible to describe a single subject as you I think just did. I mean, it could relate to, you know, lawyer requirements of, you know, relating to membership in organizations or something. It's not that you cannot describe a unifying subject. You know, I'm just kind of going back to the basic test, and you know that the court has said is that a measure violates a single subject when it has more than one subject and at least two distinct and separate purposes which are not dependent upon or connected with each other. And that's what I guess that's what I'm seeing at this point, is there just really two separate purposes here. And in fact, I think the real purpose probably, and maybe I shouldn't use that phrase, but what may be the primary purpose, which is to nullify number 41, is hidden within the folds, if you will. I don't know how an average voter could understand it. Again, this isn't like number 61, where there's a phrase that an average voter might have difficulty understanding. This is the for an average voter to understand this that purpose of number 123, they'd have to understand that the definition of labor organization in number 123 is the opposite of what they might think it is. And so to me, that is a major and independent purpose of number 123. And in addition, a purpose appears to be to prohibit employers from requiring membership in other kinds of organizations that have nothing to do with bargaining or wages and rates of pay and those kinds of things. You know, like I say, just professional membership organizations or kind of garden variety things, like, as Mr. Gruskin said, credit unions and things like that. And I don't really see that those are connected or dependent upon one another. I think they're two separate purposes.
Can I take one more minute?
Yeah, okay, go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry, my answer was way too long-winded.
No.
Anyway.
It seems to me that an argument can be, well, it seems what you have here, even though maybe the text of 123 contemplates the passage of both, is I think these could be viewed as competing measures. Right? It's probably stating the obvious, but I guess my question is, is it, and I'm just asking for your take on it, is if you have a measure that clearly competes with another measure that it's on the ballot, it's been before the title board, set a title set, or that's meant to supersede that measure should both of them pass, and in addition creates some other substantive right or procedure or goes in a different direction than the, using our example here, the preceding measure, are there circumstances under which that type of second measure that does have a competing purpose in your mind would have a single subject, could have a single subject?
Yeah, I think so, if I understand your question. I mean, I think a measure that's whose purpose is to nullify or preempt another measure, that could have a single subject. I mean, if this measure only included the language about the definition of labor organization, you know, in perhaps including the definition of labor organization together with the language that says this definition. Applies throughout the article, notwithstanding any other provision of law, and regardless of the number of votes received, and that kind of thing. I mean, I think that would be an example of a measure that has a single subject, a single purpose, and there may be a more direct route to do that. I mean, in this case, for example, the measure could simply say that I think that an employer may require membership in or participation in a labor organization as a condition of employment, and this measure prevails over any other measure, regardless of the number of votes that may be cast. But one, you know, my difficulty is that 123 then goes on to address membership in and granted in other organizations, but exactly opposite organizations. And so that's where I see the second purpose unconnected. Now, granted, I guess I'll take a run at defending the measure from single subject, but just for the sake of putting this on the table, and this is, but it's also going through my mind, is that, you know, can proponents say to themselves, is this a reasonable a way of looking at this measure? Proponents say to themselves, you know, number one, number 41 raises a good question. When should employers require employees to belong to certain kinds of organizations? That's a legitimate matter of public policy. Our view, our group of proponents thinks that, you know, unions probably is a legitimate thing for employers to require participation in. But other things, you know, just generally employers ought not to do that. And so perhaps as a matter of public policy, that is what a group of proponents may want to do, and therefore they've got two different things in their proposal, 123, that addresses the fact that, you know, requiring membership in labor union should be okay, but other kind of organizations is not. And, you know, I'm just trying to take a run at, could you in a vacuum come up with a public policy position that says that's the right answer, and in order to achieve that result, you have to both nullify number 41 and substitute a better public policy. I mean, I'm just not there yet.
Well, but that's exactly the defense that the proponents of 61 put forward, was that, well, we agree with kind of the broad idea of the proponents of 31 or whatever it was, that the state should make a statement against discrimination based on race, and so that's why we used the exact same language they used. But we just want to make sure that everyone understands that it's a little bit different. I mean, Mr. Gruskin will probably get an electronic copy of the brief filed by the proponents in 61 and change some of the wording around. It's the exact same argument here. We agree that there are certain things that employees shouldn't be required to do. That's why we're using this labor organization language. And it's their fault for using this broad term when they could have been more precise, and so we're being more precise by defining what's what. And so how can you say that our measure, which is more precise, is more than one subject, when this other one that's broader, you've already upheld as a single subject? I mean, I think this everything about this parallels 61, from the measure itself to the arguments on both sides, and given where the Supreme Court came out, I can't distinguish it enough on that point. I'm still struggling with the business about exempting the measure from rules of interpretation in addition to all this. But on that point, this seems exactly like 61 to me. And I wish I could come up with a reason to oppose it, but I can't.
Mr. Gruskin, maybe two statutory sites. That, first of all, in terms of Mr. Domenico's concern, which I've already, I think, substantively acknowledged, there's a statute that says that whichever gets the most. So this is a constitutional provision. It seems to me the constitutional provision has a right to preempt statutory limitation. Mm-hmm. As to Mr. Hobbs' concern, I totally understand where you're coming from, but the conundrum that proponents find themselves in when you have one end of either spectrum represented is that the statutes are clear that this board can't set a conflicting title. So we couldn't come up with a measure that, in essence, uses the word not in front of the specific provisions of number 41. I think that, you know, you can set up, as I think Mr. Carton called them, competing measures that kind of craft their own place in the political and policy spectrum. You can't set up a measure that is just anti whatever someone else already has gotten through this board, because I think you've got a limitation. So,
well, if I might, why? I mean, I don't want to get into the language. You know, we don't normally get into the why did proponents choose certain language. But by contrast, why would number 123 not be drafted to say an employer shall not require as a condition of employment participation in any employee organization, and then put in an exception that says, but this doesn't apply to labor organizations or unions. I mean, if the public policy that's sought here is, it generally is requiring employees to belong to employee organizations is wrong, but there's an exception, why not just say that? If that's what the measure, if that's the idea. Why say that it's, that I mean, it kind of gets to my biggest problem here is that it's drafted in a way almost patently surreptitious by saying you can't require people to participate in labor organizations and then defining that to mean something other than what a labor organization is.
Well, it wasn't intended to be surreptitious. You know, I understand your point. Frankly, if I'd had maybe another cut at it, or I could have passed the draft past you, you might be looking at different language right now. I mean, that's just what it comes down to.
Further discussion on single subject? I at this point, I'm still of the belief that the measure violates single subject, but I certainly understand Mr. Domenico's point that it's harder to make that case in light of the court's decision in number 61.
I mean, I agree with you. I think it's surreptitious. It uses language in a way that is, if not intentionally, effectively confusing and deceptive. But that's exactly why I voted against 61, and the Supreme Court had no trouble saying that that's not our business. And so I can't justify voting against it on that point. And at this point, I'm still, I'm not convinced enough about the exemption from the statutory rules of interpretation, vote against it on that. So I don't know if I should make a motion or. So then I'll move then that we, that the board find that measure number 123 constitutes a single subject and move on to setting a title.
Second.
If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-1.
And let's
turn to the staff draft, which Ms. Gomez has displayed on the screen. Mr. Gruskin, do you have some suggestions? An alternative draft?
Nothing if not predictable.
Thank you.
I think the staff draft is largely, largely just fine. Acted on the language, frankly, because in light of the dissent on 61, I didn't think that the introductory phrase ought to raise those concerns. And it also seemed to me that the staff draft, by referring to certain organizations, really probably didn't give as much clarity as it could have. Hence. Title talks about limits on employer-required conditions of employment, and then makes just a couple of very minor modifications, as you can see, referencing labor and labor organization. I split up that one really long phrase in the middle, just thought it read more easily. Use providing rather than stating there on the last clause. And I didn't think that the concluding clause was as descriptive as it could be in terms of the preemption issue. I just tried to simplify that. Changes along those lines or not would be acceptable for those comments.
What I'm about to say sort of reminds me of things I've heard from Mr. Domenico, is my difficulties with the title are probably related to my difficulties with single subject. Number one, I don't know what to do about the fact that the measure defines labor union to be the opposite of what an average voter might think. The staff draft and Mr. Gruskin, your alternative, I think is accurate. A careful reader can certainly see for himself or herself that it's an unusual definition, and so maybe that's okay. The question in my mind is, do we need to do something further? And I'm thinking probably not, but it certainly is troubling to me for the same reason that I was troubled by the single subject question. I guess related to that, though, is the expression of the single subject. Concerns me a little bit because it's, to the extent that it's saying that it's about limits on employer-required conditions of employment. Isn't that, I mean, it's a little more focused than that. I mean, I was suggesting it has more to do with employer requirements for participation in certain organizations, perhaps more like, I don't know, the staff draft or the title for number 41, which was concerning participation in labor organization as a condition of employment. I'm wondering, by contrast, if it would be better to say something about concerning participation in certain organizations as a condition of employment or something like that that focuses on organizations.
That's the sense of the board. We certainly don't object to language.
Well, I'm reluctant to say labor organizations, the expression of the single subject. I guess the structure I'm thinking about is just, subject is employer requirements for participation in just certain organizations. Be kind of my idea, and then go on to say, and in connection there with prohibiting an employer, and then, and saying what the measure really does, and including something to the effect that it's the organizations that it's talking about is organizations that exist for purposes other than dealing with labor disputes, et cetera.
Well, I share the difficulties Mr. Hobbs has because before this week, I would have voted against this for the same reasons Mr. Hobbs voted against it. And so that leaves me in a very difficult position trying to comply with the Supreme Court's analysis of a single subject and with our duty to draft a title that is clear and not confusing and captures exactly what's going on, because I think the measure itself is not clear. And that makes it difficult. I just to emphasize that, the first time I read this, I didn't know that Mr. Gruskin was representing the proponents, and I thought it meant the exact opposite of what it actually means. So I had to read the other than language three or four times to figure out what was going on. Most of the voters, I'm not sure, will know that Mr. Gruskin and his friends are the ones supporting this. So it's very difficult to get across that labor organization means everything other than what is typically understood to be a labor organization. That said, we're stuck with the Supreme Court's decision, and the best I can do, the single subject language, I think is, I agree, labor organization, I'd try to keep that out of that language if we can. I think there are a number of ways you could do it. I actually wondered if we should just keep the labor language out of the entire title, because I think it only serves to confuse, but then I'm not sure we're doing a very good job of reflecting the measure. So the best I could come up with short of that was to take Mr. Gruskin's suggestion and on line 4 just put quotes around labor organization the first time it's used, as a signal that it's got a definition, that it's a defined term. Other than that, I'm not sure how to make it any clearer to people what this does. I think it's confusing. I think it's hard to tell. The other than language is, especially the way these titles read, it's hard to tell whether you're in the middle of a triple negative or a quadruple negative and what's going on, but that's the format we're stuck with, and I guess under the Supreme Court's precedent, we have to do the best we can and let the two sides fight it out now in November. I don't know any better way to make these clear when the measures themselves are so confusing in language that define terms in ways that is, if not the opposite of what would be generally understood, as the Supreme Court acknowledged, at least something that is different from what many voters would think reading it. So I don't know how we'd improve on this very much. Jordan?
I would support your proposed revision, Mr. Hobbs, if what you're saying is to change the language to an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning participation in certain organizations as a condition of employment. I think that Mr. Gruskin said that the subject of the measure was, and I hope I'm not misstating this, but prohibits conditioning employment on membership in a non-union group. And I think that the revision you have suggested is consistent with that and does about as good a job as can be done with the statement of the single subject. And I guess as far as putting quotations around labor organization in line 4, I guess since we've got quotations around labor organization down in lines 5 and 6 where it says defining labor organization, I'm not sure it's necessary. I understand what Mr. Domenico trying to signal there. I'm not sure at this point that
it seems more important to me to have it there than anywhere else the first time you use it, where it says prohibiting an employer from requiring an employee to join a labor union or a labor organization. That's where most people, I don't think it can be disputed, if they just read that part, would think union. And the fact that then later on we put quotes around it, I don't think does a, well, it doesn't do as good a job as we could possibly do in signaling to people that labor organization may not just mean what you think it does, and in fact, we're going to define it here in a minute. So, if you don't want, excuse me, if you don't want multiple quotation marks around it, I would want to move to remove them from the later use and insert them there, because I think that's where it's most important to have it, is first time you use it, where you're talking about where the confusion I think arises is in that sentence, and so that's where I would want to do what we can to signal that it's that you should check out what that term is defined to mean.
Mr. Gruskin, any objection to enclosing that first reference to labor organization with quotes? And I like that. I think for the reasons Mr. Domenico said, I think really we need to call attention to that term, and I think it's reasonable to do that with quotation marks, because this is, you know, the casual reader can you know, read that and maybe read no further, because when it once I think eyes start to glaze over once you see defining labor organization, no, I don't want to read the rest. And I think really the quotes at least help signal that this is a defined term, that is an important defined term.
We use bold print or red letters for other than. That's what I think is the part that really got my attention. I had to be careful about.
A good question. I think there are potentially some limitations with ballot preparation software that some county clerks have. So although on the one hand, special effects like bolding and underlining might be problematic, all caps is used for some measures. I'm certainly open to the possibility of trying to find a way to emphasize the other than language. Mr. Gessler?
Mr. Hobbs, if I may speak, I have not signed up.
Right, if you'll identify yourself and then sign up later.
Certainly. Yes. My name is Scott Gessler, and I represent an organization called A Better Colorado. And I'd just like to make one comment on this. I think the appropriate way to solve that particular issue is to basically flip the sequence of explaining what this measure does, because the truth is that the majority of this measure is, and the major import of this measure is in the second half, this definition of labor organization, which is truly the opposite of any common understanding of the term labor organization, and is the opposite of any understanding that the law has ever had. Well, maybe I can't say ever had, but certainly that I'm aware of, and I would assume most people are ever aware of. This completely redefines labor organization to mean the exact opposite of how it's been used in language and law. And because that's so important, and I agree with Mr. Domenico that the other than is really the critical language here, I would start off with that. I mean, the title board is not constrained to following the same sequence of language that an initiative drafter puts together. The title board is charged with creating a fair and accurate title, which fairly expresses the meaning. And so the most important part of this is the definition. So I think the appropriate way to handle that is to start off with saying, concerning the I would actually argue that it should be concerning the definition of labor organization. That's truly the import of this. And the prohibition only is secondary. And the most important thing that people need to understand is this radical departure from existing law and common language. I mean, we can sort of, after a while, redefine the English language to mean whatever we want legally. But if you're not going to mislead people, if you're going to be fair and accurate, that should be the first thing in this. Then explaining what the prohibition. And I would also emphasize that, you know, this specifically purports I'm sure we'll have discussions about that on our motion for rehearing. But this certainly purports to change labor organization over any conflicting definition in Article 18, so it's a universal application, as well as any conflicting other initiative that may occur. So that's an extremely broad sweep that goes beyond just this particular prohibition and this particular initiative. So I think it should come first, and I think the emphasis should be on what this is really doing here.
Thank you. Oh, and Mr. Gessler, if you'll...
Can you do that afterwards?
Sure, yeah. Further discussion?
I think those are actually pretty good ideas. I think for now I may want to just wait to see a petition for rehearing that might lay them out a bit more concretely. But I think Mr. Gessler makes a good point that addresses somewhat Mr. Hobbs's difficulty with the measure, which is that just saying this deals with whatever we were going to say, conditions of employment relating to certain organizations, doesn't capture the additional aspect of this, which is to change the definition of labor organization in other measures. And Mr. Gessler's point about making, which I think the proponents made pretty clear, is in fact the main point of this. Could be a way to address that. But as I said, it may make more sense because I think, as I've said a number of times, there are lots of ways that we can write a title that complies with the law. For now, I'm willing to vote to approve something along the lines we've been discussing, but with the idea that on a motion for rehearing, we could improve it quite a bit.
I guess I think I like, or I certainly don't have any problem with most of Mr. Gruskin's suggestions, but maybe just for the sake of moving forward and seeing what the board wants to do, I'll work off the staff draft and see if there's support then for changing the expression in single subject along the lines that I think Mr. Carton described. And I don't know, let's see, I guess if I recall this accurately, I'm not sure the most efficient way to get to this result, but maybe strike everything beginning from where the cursor is on the screen down to the end of line 2 before certain. And then insert participation in, and then in line 3 after organizations, insert as a condition of employment. So that the expression of the single subject would read concerning participation in certain organizations as a condition of employment. And to see if there's support, I'll go ahead and move that change.
Second.
Any discussion by the board? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. I would like to go ahead and move then Mr. Domenico's suggestion about quotes. And I also want to be incorporating some of Mr. Gruskin's suggestions. Maybe in line 4, where it refers to requiring an employer to join, I would strike and insert quote labor. I'm sorry, I should say A before the quote mark, the article A, and then quote labor, And then after, at the end of organization, an end quote. So that clause would be, would read, prohibiting an employer from requiring an employee to join a, quote, labor organization, end quote, or pay dues, comma, et cetera. I'll go ahead and move that change to see if there's support.
I second it.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Other changes to the staff draft? I'm just going to go through Mr. Gruskin's suggestions maybe to see what other ones we should just go ahead and incorporate. In the next line, I believe, it goes on to say, pay dues, assessments, or other charges to or for such an organization. Insert the word such. Any opposition to that? I'll end up making this one motion, but just speak up if anybody opposes any of these changes. Then after this, oh. Okay, then where the cursor is, put a semicolon and insert defining, quote, labor organization, end quote. As one, then it picks up with the current language that exists solely or primarily, etc. Any opposition at this point? The next suggestion from Mr. Gruskin. I see you're so far ahead of me. Maybe we should just go do this. So where the cursor is, strike the comma, insert a semicolon. And then strike the word stating and insert providing. And then after Colorado Constitution in line 10, insert a comma and the phrase, including any other amendment adopted at the 2008 general election. And picking up the remainder, after number of votes, insert, after number of votes, insert each receives, and strike the remainder of the title, and keeping the period. I think those are the suggestions that Mr. Gruskin has. Go ahead and move those changes.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Further changes to the staff draft? Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
We're moved.
Second.
Seconded. Let me read into the record then how the staff draft, or how the title would read if the motion is adopted. And Ceci's showing it on the screen with the changes incorporated. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning participation in certain organizations as a condition of employment, comma, in connection therewith, comma, prohibiting an employer from requiring an employee to join a, quote, labor organization, end quote, or to pay dues, comma, assessments, comma, or other charges to or for such an organization, semicolon, defining, quote, labor organization, end quote, as one that exists solely or primarily for a purpose other than dealing with employees concerning grievances, comma, labor disputes, comma, wages, comma, rates of pay, comma, employee benefits, comma, hours of employment, comma, or conditions of work, semicolon, and providing that the definition of, quote, labor organization, end quote, in this amendment shall prevail over any other conflicting definition in Article 28 of the Colorado Constitution, comma, including any other amendment adopted at the 2008 general election, regardless of the number of votes each receives, period, with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause. 18, I'm sorry, I read Article 28 and I should have read Article 18. Thank you, Mr. Carton. Is there any other discussion? The motion is to adopt this as the title. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 123. The time is 9:44 a.m. Let's go then to number 124. And we had skipped over number 2, but I'm going to come back to that after number 124 if the proponents are present. So, Mr. Gruskin, on number 124.
This is another opportunity for the title board to exercise its faint praise of an initiative draft. This one is different only in that the final clause of the measure that talks about notwithstanding the votes was deleted. So, all of your thoughts and concerns, or
we all just incorporate all of our thoughts and concerns from the last one.
Sounds good to me. I don't want to repeat everything.
Yes,
I think we're all in agreement. We can incorporate our remarks from number 123. Is there anybody? The first question then is the single subject question. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the question of single subject? If not, is there a motion?
I move that we board find that number 124 constitutes a single subject and move on to setting the title.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. No. That motion carries 2-1. Then let's turn to the staff draft, which, Mr. Gessler.
Mr. Hoffman, I apologize. I do have a comment with respect, however, to the board's jurisdiction that is not subject to maybe the appropriate time.
If there's other objections on jurisdiction, why don't you go ahead and raise them before we get to the titles then.
Basically, for number 24, it changes, obviously I'll bring this up as necessary in a motion for rehearing, but it changes it says this definition shall prevail over any conflicting definition of labor organization in Article 18. And that's a change from the initial draft of Article 28. And I do not believe that is in response to a comment from review and comment. That's a substantive change. It's not in response.
Mr. Gruskin, if you'd like to respond to that.
I did not make copies of the transcripts on 123 and 124 for the board. I apologize. But as an officer of the court, I'll represent to you and read to you the transcript on 123. The staff went through the proposed purposes and asked, quote, do these purposes accurately reflect the intent of the proponents? Mr. Gruskin. Not entirely, but that's my fault. There's a typo in subsection 2. The amendment is to Article 18, but our typo was indicated that it's Article 28 in subsection 2. That's obviously a typographical error since you amended Article 8, since you amended Article 18. Your memo accurately reflects that typographical error, but that's something we'd like to correct, obviously, since it would be inherently contradictory, so I'm assuming that you agree that that would be a technical correction. Mr. Pogue nods head. Mr. Forrestal agreed. Mr. Pogue agreed. And then I raise it a couple more times as to number 123 and 124. They read the purposes again. Staff says, quote, do these purposes accurately reflect the intent of the proponents? Mr. Kruskin, except for the proponents, typographical error included in subsection 2 referencing Article 28 and accurately repeated in your point number 3, they do. So, wouldn't have had the benefit of these transcripts. Nonetheless, we made that point. Staff was acknowledging that was an issue that there could be.
Thank you. Mr. Gessler?
If I may make a comment, I'll ask Mr. Gruskin for a copy of that and probably raise that issue on the motion for rehearing. I don't think it really makes sense for me to engage in extended argument right now. So
okay.
Hopefully we can exchange documents and have some pointed arguments before you all.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gessler. Then we'll go ahead and turn to the staff draft. I'm wondering if it would make sense to start with the titles that we set for number 123. And see if there's any changes to that. Does that make sense, Mr. Gruskin?
It does, Mr. Chair. If I could just provide you, I think the only thing that you'll really care about is the very last clause. Just makes it clear that it covers anything else considered at that election.
Okay. Ms. Gomez is displaying on the screen the title that we set for number 123. And if we were to start with that,
Mr. Chairman, is in the last line, put a period after 2008 general election and strike the clause regardless of the number of votes each receives.
Okay, I'd suggest then let's go ahead and do that for discussion purposes.
After the general election.
I'll go ahead and move that change to the staff draft.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Are there further changes to the staff draft as amended? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 124. Let's, we'll take about a 5-minute break.